Dear God, Mark and I and Paul are just a little sick and tired of banging our heads against the brick wall you call opportunity. We're bloodied and bowed, but not daunted, because we know as we smack our heads against that door and our brains spill on the floor here that you'll pick them up and do something with them. Something else, I hope. It's not been good for us, Lord. Our mission is not an easy one. Mark actually did his first tax form this year, and I'm just a little sick and tired of being a write-off. We have habits, Lord. We can't help it. We're just anonymous little creatures, tiny pieces of undiscovered comic excrement, swirling around on the big planet Earth, searching for just a stinking postage stamp of enough stuff. I'm talking about something on the stamp.
Lou.
Please, dear Lord, move us from the public theater into a larger space. A much larger space. Big, where there are usherettes, hundreds of them, wearing pasties and who say things like, Lou, how's tricks? In the name of the Father and the Son, and Marilyn Monroe, may she rest in peace, because, boy, would I love a piece of her. Bring her over to the house, Lord. Dead or alive, I don't care.
Lou.
Oh. Amen. And now, Brother Mark will sing for you.
Hey, okay, this is the Barnyard Song. Can we have some house lights, please? I want you all to join in as we go along. You should be able to figure it out pretty quickly. Just join in as you feel it, as we do the chicken verse. Ready? Okay, here we go. Hey, okay. We got a few people to join in there, and God bless you. God bless you for that. You know, when I think of chickens, I cannot help but think, I am ashamed to say, of this great country of ours in the last few years. We feathered our nest and were content to sit with our heads under our wings, but the fox has slipped back into the old hen house. Well, maybe it's time we woke up and found that chicken in our hearts, wrung him by his neck until his little beady eyes pop out. Maybe it's time we found courage to restore the eagle that once reigned there. Yes, maybe we'll find that courage as we sing this next verse, the pig verse. Ready? Ho-ho! Okay, got a few more people to join in that time, and God bless you. I think we're going to get everyone singing before this song is over. You know, I remember it wasn't too long ago that I was out on the street yelling, Pig! 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 And I wasn't calling the herd. Now, those times are gone. The day that chicken walked into my heart, I crossed that street. I got to the other side. I bowed my head and started walking along with everyone else, kind of like a sheep. And that brings us to the next verse, the sheep verse. Here we go. Join in as you feel it. Hey, okay, yeah, I think we had, well, maybe not everyone singing on that one, but quite a number of people, and God bless you. God bless you, and God bless this great country of ours. Yeah, you know, all those sheep marching along together, heads bowed, I remember black sheep. The black sheep were marching along with the white sheep, but now it seems they're cutting those black sheep out and herding them into some other corral. Civil rights. There's a couple of words you haven't heard in a while. Woo-hoo! They are gone. Gone. They're called human rights now. Any minorities here tonight? Just raise your hands. You know who you are. Yeah, good luck to you. Good luck to you in the years to come. Well, Maybe it's better to have a sacrificial lamb or two than to slaughter a sacred cow. Hey, and that leads us to the next verse. The cow verse. Okay, ladies only on this one. Let's go. Hey, I think we lost a few heifers on that one. You know, a lot of very powerful people are starting to think the ERA is about as useful as tits on a bull. But things aren't so bad. I see there's a woman sitting on the Supreme Court. Well, maybe that's a fair trade for losing the right to abortion. After all, we can't be fighting like cats and dogs all the time. And that brings us to the dog verse. Everybody, let's go! Now I want everyone to join in this last verse. I want everyone to pick their favorite animal. Pick any animal you want, because you still have the freedom to do that for the moment. Okay, pick that animal, and I want to hear the whole barnyard singing and carousing together like one happy farm. Okay!
Thank you, Mark, for that stirring and uplifting spiritual. It's on our album, Songs of Animal Resistance, which we'll be selling in the lobby after the show. You know, I'm feeling great tonight, and I hope you are too, because I felt the power of the laugh in this room. And we need that precious laughter in these terrible and troubled times in which we live. As Mark's song pointed out, as we swing into the 80s, it gets tougher and tougher for animals and humans alike to stand up and laugh at what they believe in. A wise man once said, "The truth shall make you free." An even wiser man replied, "The truth hurts." And here I am to tell you tonight that these past few years, the truth has been a pain in the ass. The only way to live with the truth these days is to laugh at it. And what is the truth? Well, the truth is, there is some guilt lying about here, brothers and sisters. I can feel it. The guilt of being indoors for the past 10 years, while some of the things you cared so much about died in the streets. But let's face it, it got a little dangerous out there. You won the battle to give the streets back to the people, and as a result, you stay locked in your apartment. You're surrounded by issues that are busting your balls and ballettes, and there don't seem to be easy answers anymore. Now, you probably came here this evening with a little trepidation in your hearts. You probably came here tonight thinking that this offering of ours would be some kind of a political Jacques Hughes. You worried that we would shriek at you. Shame, shame, for trying to make a lot of money. For using that small nest egg to play the market. Not tonight, brothers and sisters. Not tonight. Because we want you to be free of guilt and full of laughter. God damn it, go out there. Make it hand over fist, anyone you can. If you've got to screw somebody, screw them to the wall. So your building is going co-op. Fine, make that deal and kick out the 4 black families and elderly white folk and turn that old building into a nice piece of real estate. Rake it in. Invest in uranium, silver, and chrome in Rhodesia. It's your pearl, so you suck on it. Suck it dry. We all deserve a piece of the pie or a pizza pie. Canned food will do. And be free of guilt? Is that what you're telling me, Brother Lou? Yes, because that's where we come in. Mark and I will give you the healing power of social satire. You can rest secure in the thought that Mark and I are hard at work, laughing all your troubles away. I know what you're thinking. Where do we get the guts and faith to go on, huh? It's hard. It gets harder each year. I'll be honest with you. We need cash. Cold, hard cash. Gold fillings, a bauble or two, anything. So we can pursue the work of banishing guilt and trauma and even sexual frustration from this great land of ours. Your money will go directly, and I mean directly, into cleaning up the stinking rat trap of an apartment that Mark and I live in. Right now, we're spending too much of our precious time laughing away the filth we live in, instead of laughing for you. A couch! All we need is a couch that comes free of lice, a chair with four legs, a cat for our litter box. We have plans for a crusade across the whole planet. I'm talking about franchises of mini-churches, exact replicas of our smiling Church of Christ and the Holy Joke, sauna included, that we're building in Tucson, Arizona. This is where we will be housing our church's prized collection of relics. Will Rogers' funny bone, Mort Saul's tongue, and Lenny Bruce's middle finger. And you can purchase replicas of these relics tonight, along with that LP I mentioned earlier. And miracles? You want miracles? This man died last night while brooding over the president's fiscal policies. He's cold as last week's mashed potatoes. But I will personally resurrect him with a joke in the lobby after the show. He's yours for $6.98, a great little gift for the kids. And we need the buckos, brothers and sisters. Right now, this is but a dream. Money is tight these days. And with the current budget, you have to have a bullet for a head to get so much as a dime. Well, we're no crybabies. And I'm going to tell you a secret, because you folks have been the most wonderful audience we've ever played to. We have been talking to people so powerful, I can't even mention their names. And we are going to be the first church to get its own MX missile. Why an MX? Because it's supposed to be hidden, right? Well, what better place to hide it than with the two of us? Hell, our agent doesn't even know where we are half the time. Now, I know missiles aren't funny, but they help pay the rent. And if a country stops laughing, we'll blow them back to the Stone Age. Our country knows what funny is. Reagan tries. He even goes out and gets shot for a laugh. Then we get General Haig with his eyes popping out yelling, "I'm in charge here, I'm in charge." Oh, that's funny. And we're funny too, every night except Monday. Unless they kick us out, because there are people out there who fear the laugh of God. They're scared of the smiling Christ. It makes me want to puke. But we won't go, not without a fight. And if they take us away, our home phone number is in the program. I would like to introduce our special guest this evening. Although Mark and I trained in comedy, neither of us had any religious training. We met this man when he was on his first American tour, in a mall in Passaic, New Jersey. Please join me in a generous welcome to the Maharishi Baba Yaga.
I would like to talk to you this evening about spiritual growth, the growth of the spirit. Oftentimes, in our lives, we feel a longing for something more. We feel that there must be more to this life, and truly, it is written, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was more." We all had to become one with the Word, to join in the oneness of the Word, to embrace the One. Anyone. Maybe that one. Now, how do we go about embracing the One? We learn how to embrace the One through the four truths. The first truth is that there is suffering. I suffer. You suffer. Let's face it, we are unhappy. The second truth is that you are the cause of your own suffering. The third truth is that you can rid yourself of the suffering. And the fourth truth is that you rid yourself of the suffering by following the path. What is the path? You find this path through a teacher. This teacher must be one who embraces the One. Now, at any given moment, there is only one person on the face of the earth who is the embodiment of the embracing of the One. And, lucky for you, That is me. We are all clouded by the world of samsara, the world of illusion. We are lost in this world. Our minds are clouded by this elusive thought. Let me give a simple demonstration of the clouding of the mind by samsara. Would you think of a number from 1 to 10? Are you thinking of that number? Is that number 4? Yes? Thank you. You see, because I embrace the one, I am able to know the oneness of the world, to see the oneness, to know a simple number in the mind of another. Would you think of a number from 1 to 10? Are you thinking of that number? Is that number 6? No? You see, your mind is clouded with samsara, with illusory thought. If your mind had not been clouded, we would have had the same number. Now, let us move on to meditation, to the teaching. I would like if we would all join for a few moments in a brief experience of the embracing of the One. Now, everyone, please, sit straight. Your back is straight. Both of your feet are on the floor. The head rests on the shoulders. Now, close your eyes. You, sir, you are tilted to one side. You seem to be... Oh, I see. Your wallet is in your pocket. Just take your wallet out of your pocket. Just set it down. Now, close your eyes. Let your mind become nothing. Let your mind become empty. Let the thoughts as they occur float away like little balloons floating off into the air. They disappear. They are gone. The mind becomes empty. You see, the mind is like a mirror. If it is stained, you stain the reflection of the world. But if it is clear, then you reflect the oneness of the world. All right. Thank you. Open your eyes. Now, was there one of you who perhaps very strongly felt the one, felt at one with the world, felt the embracing of the one? Is there such a one? Yes. You felt it? Now, can I ask you, do you have a steady job? Visa card? MasterCard? No? Is there someone else? Yes. Do you have a steady job? MasterCard? Visa card? A good credit rating? Any mortgages or liens? I see. Very good. It is perhaps time for you to come and live at the ashram. Do not quit your job, but simply come to think of pursuing your study at the center. All right. Now, I must leave you this evening, but first, I would like to tell you a story. Once, there was a man who had a teacher. And although he tried very, very hard, he could not always do exactly what his teacher asked him to do. One day, this man was hit by a truck, and he did not die quickly. Thank you.
By now, many of you are probably thinking to yourselves, comedy and religion, yes, of course, it seems so right. It's no accident that Mark and I are here tonight. It is all part of God's divine plan. And we'll be offering all of you the chance to take comedy into your own hearts later this evening. But first, I would like to share with you a personal history of my own conversion, the remarkable story of my own rebirth into comedy. It came to me in a vision one night. It was election eve, 1980, and America was about to hitch its wagon to a 20-mule team star. Mark was out of commission with a gentleman's complaint, and I was doing a solo somewhere in Ohio. But not only that, he wants Goebbels as his Secretary of State. Thank you. You're a wonderful audience. Always a pleasure to be in Cincinnati. Can you believe those Republicans? They meet up in Detroit, they get rid of the ERA and abortion, and we're lucky they didn't decide to bring back slavery. What do you mean it's a good idea? Jesus Christ. I'll tell you the problem with Reagan is that he's bringing back Kissinger. I can't believe it. In any civilized country in the world, he'd have been tried for war crimes. Not here. No. I'm a Yidbob. Look, I'm Jewish. So is he. But he's also a Nazi. You can't be a Jew and a Nazi at the same time. It's impossible. Why? Because Jews are born genetically liberal. Kike? What do you mean, kike? What rock did you call out from under? Listen, it wasn't my idea to do a phone company convention. My agent called and said it might be nice. Reach out and touch someone. Hey, well, touch this. I give up. Oh, you want a joke? I've got a joke for you. There was this Polish woman who walked into a bar with a bowling ball under her arm. You're going to love this. The first thing I saw was my body on the floor of the club. It was the biggest laugh I had gotten all night. I wanted to stick around, but I started to drift upward through a mist. The stage receded further as I moved down what seemed a dimly lit corridor. In the distance, I saw a door. It was a blue door, and on it was a sign that said Men's. I pushed it open and went inside. All I could see was a bunch of clouds. Then I heard people going, Mr. Black, Mr. Black, Mr. Black,
Mr. Black. Mr. Black?
Yes. And there was this human being of light.
That was a tough crowd you were working.
What's going on?
Come with me.
Where am I?
You're sort of dead, Mr. Black.
What?
Please, our time together is short. I have to show you a few things. Follow me. Through these clouds. Look, Mr. Black. It's election eve, 1956, and America is about to snuggle under a blanket of cozy prosperity with Ike and Mamie. Do you see that?
It's my elementary school.
And inside that school, there, a little curly-headed boy with a hook for a nose.
It's me!
Look, the teacher is gone, and you're up in front of the class doing your classic fallout shelter routine. You're very funny. And the other children are laughing. And look, there, in the back, a little blonde-haired girl.
Sally McKenzie!
Yes, little Sally McKenzie. A wasp, Lewis. And you know what that means. Silky skin and dimpled thighs and just the beginning of downy hair on her forearms, looking at you, laughing at you, pounding her desk with hilarity. And next to her, do you see him? Who's that?
Jimmy Whitlock.
Yes. Little Jimmy Whitlock, a lonely boy who is desperately trying for a laugh by making farting noises under his arm. But the class can't take its eyes off you as you start to make fun of President Eisenhower's bald head. Your eyes find Sally McKenzie's, and a sudden slight moistness appears around her parted lips. Come with me.
Wait a minute!
There's more, Lewis. Look, a university campus in the flowering turmoil of 1968. And look, that dark-haired boy with the bullhorn looks like he's had a nose job. He's haranguing the crowd with one-liners. And beside him, who is that?
Hannah Jones.
Hannah Jones. She's beautiful. A Nubian princess and a fiery radical. You press against each other. Activism is like a fever in your blood. Her liquid brown eyes flash approval as the crowd cheers your joke about Lyndon Johnson?
The one about my wanting to do to Hannah what LBJ'd been doing to the country.
Yes, yes, that's the one. My God, Lou, that was funny. But look, at the back of the crowd, who is that vacant young man with the long, stringy hair?
It's Jimmy Whitlock.
Yes, and he's pleased that the strike has shut down the university because he was suspended for hitting the campus security guard in the face with a pie.
He was never a class act.
Over here, Mr. Black. Quickly. Look.
It's a cabaret.
Time?
Late at night, election day, 1976. The me generation has crawled up its own navel and doesn't know what sex it is anymore.
Very good, Mr. Black. You see her?
Melissa Champion.
Yes, Melissa Champion. An intelligent, self-possessed woman of impeccable taste, who has an admirable sense of her own individuality, a beacon in the struggle for women's independence, with cleavage that just won't quit. Melissa Champion, who has come to see you work the room tonight, Lou, and you were sensational.
No.
Listen to me. The cabaret is empty except for the two of you, and you murmur your casual witticisms about the welfare system in your offhand way, and she is entranced. And the look through the laughter in her eyes is something close to amazement, isn't it? Her self-determining hair brushes against her intellectual shoulders as she stares at your never-ending font of humor.
What?
But look, the door to the kitchen swings open, and a busboy appears, wiping his hands on his grimy apron.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Jimmy Whitlock.
Yes, Jimmy Whitlock. And he lives by himself. And the walls of his room are plastered with pictures of his two favorite comedians, Jerry Lewis and Bruno Hauptmann. And he spends his days before a mirror, entertaining an audience of one with a joy buzzer and a bottle of seltzer. Come with me, Mr. Black. Over here, Mr. Black, quickly.
What a beautiful beach!
Yes.
Where are we?
Aruba.
I've never been to Aruba.
I know. Okay, let's go. One more vision, then we must send you back.
Send me back?
Yes. You have important work to do elsewhere, and even there you have so little time.
What do you mean?
Look, Lewis, look at your future. See that airy, sunlit room?
Yes, and a lot of plants, lots of vitamins, a shitload of cocaine, and people sitting around a desk in a hot tub.
Yes, Lou, L.A., and that young man is your agent. And the older man is a big Hollywood producer. He's seen your act, and he will suck your cock in order to get the screen rights.
What?
Never mind. The door of the office opens.
Who is that?
It's Diane, the executive's daughter, Diane Livingston. She's beautiful, isn't she? Blonde, tanned, tawny, lithe.
Shut up!
And she's walking towards you, isn't she? She's got a copy of your latest album, which will be on sale in the lobby after the show, and it's nestled between her armpit and her left breast. You feel her warmth on it as she presses a script into your hands.
Shut up!
And she doesn't say anything, but she looks at you meaningfully for just a second before she turns and swirls out of the office in her summer dress. Her scent is still in the air. In the script, there is a note in feminine handwriting. And what is it you read?
I didn't know anyone cared so much about people anymore. I laughed until I came. Oh, thank you, Di.
Now you walk out to your car and drive to the studio gate. There's something familiar about the armed guard at the gate, isn't there? Who is that fellow?
Oh, no, not him again.
Yes.
Jimmy Whitlock.
Yes, Jimmy Whitlock, who never made it in the East and moved to California hoping for a break. And now he works part-time as a security guard at the studio. And he's got a gun permit and a simply enormous heater strapped to his thigh. And he waves you out of the parking lot with a rubber chicken calling out, "Congratulations," with a thin smile.
He wants to kill me.
Yes. And before you know it, Lewis, you will be there.
Where?
At the top of your profession, the zenith, the apex, the acme, the Hyperion. And why? Why did you come so far with so little?
Because I was funny.
Oh, if only it were that simple. Yes. Yes, Lou, you were funny. You are funny. And you will get even funnier. But why are you funny?
I give up.
Because you are also meaningful.
So?
You are socially relevant. And why are you socially relevant? Why do you always lash out with laughter against the pains and evils of society? Why do you expend the sweat of a lifetime abusing, belittling, castigating, and deriding your betters? What is at the heart of your savage thrusts and parries? One odd circumstance.
what circumstance?
You don't get laid.
What?
You heard me. You're a celibate, a monk, a priest of comedy. Look, Lou, did you ever wind up making it with Melissa Champion?
No.
What about Hannah Jones? Ever get into her pants?
No.
Well, Jimmy Whitlock did.
What? That's not fair. I'm the funny one.
Yes, you are. And Jimmy's a jerk. But he's going to make you a legend.
When?
In his own time. It's the Lord's will, Lewis. He has chosen a difficult path for you. He has dammed up your seminal fluids, Lewis. He has diverted the river of desire that roars through your loins for a higher purpose. You've been a driven man, Lewis. And now it's going to be even more so, because you're going to be famous, Lou, rising out of nothing to a fiery blaze. And Jimmy Whitlock will be there with you, watching all those women, chicks, their damp female faces in those overheated clubs, staring at you adoringly, their mouths parted in laughter, their minds ablaze with social insight so blinding, their eyes sparkle. So you don't get laid. In the end, you will be a legend. You'll be on stage one night, in a glow of bastard amber. Sleep now, Lou. Sleep now, Lou. And you'll hear the walls rock to the sound of laughter. Your thoughts, your insights, your telling observations of contemporary society. Everyone cares what you think. Well, almost everyone. For out of the corner of your eye, you see a blur of movement. Another figure is also rising suddenly from the table and heading for the stage. And he's got a gun in his hand, and the moments are moving very swiftly now, but you just have time to see the flash of a red rubber nose.
And that's exactly the way it happened in Cincinnati that night, 7 months ago. Amazing, extraordinary, phenomenal, but don't believe a word of it. Well, the Lord works in mysterious ways. He reached down and picked me up from the floor of that club, and I went out and faced 150 people who, until that night, had devoted their entire lives to the phone company. And I raved at them for 2.5 hours, and I have no idea what I said to them, but not one of those people works for the phone company anymore. Can you believe it? 32 are Carmelite nuns laughing away sores in South America, and I have here a letter that is just unbelievable. A woman in Arizona wrote to me and said, "Dear Brother Lou, until the night I saw your act, I thought I would be working as a phone company operator for my entire life. After I saw you, I quit the phone company. I took correspondence courses, and in a few weeks, I will be the first female justice on the Supreme Court. Can you believe that? I don't know what I did that night. All I know is that the Lord touched me with the holy joke, and he touches me with it every night. I can feel it, brothers and sisters. I can feel it coming into me right now. Yes, yes, I can feel it.
Lou, Lou.
Bring me Caspar Weinberger's head.
And now, the moment we have all been waiting for this evening. Lou is going to go now, opening his soul to the laugh of God. But before we bring him back to heal, so that we may cleanse our souls, just a word of warning about what you are about to see. The awesome power of social satire can be a wonderful thing, but please, dear God, please don't try this at home. In the hands of the professionals, this can be a powerful healing tool, but in the hands of the inexperienced, it can be dangerous, overly cynical, and downright acerbic. So please, leave this to those who can harness this power for good, to us, the professionals. And now, Lou, do you feel it? Do you feel the laugh of God?
I feel it!
Ladies and gentlemen, so we can all sleep a little easier tonight, here he is, that high priest of fundamentalist comedy, Brother Lewis Black. Heal us. I feel there's someone here tonight. He's possibly a lawyer. He's got... This man is worried about the increasing influence over all our lives of multinational corporations. What can you do for him, Lou? What can you do for this man, Lou? Will you take this pie and throw it in your own face?
Yes!
Hallelujah!
You're healed now!
Now, Lou, we have a young man, or a young woman, I don't know which.
Well, get him an operation.
And a troubled young soul, a casualty of the recent war of sexual liberation.
Oh, I know that one.
Yes, Lou? What can you give this person to soothe his aching soul? Will you squirt yourself with this bottle of seltzer?
Yes!
Hallelujah!
Oh.
The fear is gone. The pain is gone. The guilt is gone. Lou, we have a woman. A young woman.
Well, get her number!
And there's a gentle swell to her belly. She's concerned, as well she might be, about the loss of her right to an abortion. Lou, she needs you. What can you do for her? Will you put this lampshade on your head?
Yes!
Hallelujah! Lou, we have someone here who feels guilty for moving away from the inner city, for failing to do anything about the sad plight of the inner city. What can you do? What can you say to him?
I've got something under my robe for him, Brother Mark.
Is it?
Yes!
Yes! The holy rubber chicken!
Suck on this!
Hallelujah!
The guilt is gone!
We'd like to leave you with our final hymn, but first, thanks to our musical directors, Paul Shearhorn, our stage manager, Evan Canary, our director, Bill Peters, our business manager, Jimmy Whitlock, our producer, Mr. Joe Papp, and our executive producer...
You know, brothers and sisters, you'd have to be goddamn blind not to see the miracles that took place on the stage here tonight. We could have brought out 150 lepers and cured them, but that would have been too easy. On your way out to the lobby this evening, we'll be selling a few things. But tonight we have a real treat for you. You know, there's something to be said for hanging on to your roots. And that's why Paul and Mark and I have gone to a lot of trouble to produce this album, Liberal Traumas of the 60s. Well, as the song says, laugh and the world laughs with you. Well, now, in the privacy of your own home, you can laugh at all those assassinations again. It happened 20 years ago. What are you going to do? Worry about it? That's right. We will also include 5 blank cassettes so that you can record the next major catastrophe yourself. Don't forget, there's 50 tabs of blotter acid on the back. God knows funny. If I had any brains at all, I would have devoted the time, energy, effort, and ingenuity into the creation of a new religion. You heard me. Instead of squandering my time writing this book, I should have created an epistle of my own and then used my stand-up arena to convince the world that it was actually some sort of ancient text. It would have been the basis for a religion similar to the one I presented in the play you just heard. I could have claimed that I had discovered a series of cave drawings in the heart of, say, Tanzania, which were drawn by a shaman who used tickling as a cure-all. Here's how I see the whole thing in my head. The drawings would have told the story of the shaman's tribe, known as the Hysterium, who, after discovering the joke, devoted their daily lives to perfecting it. They gleefully spent each day one-upping each other. The most elaborate of their jokes, however, sadly ended in the extinction of the tribe, thus the modern-day reference to a comic killing. It is unknown, I would tell my new followers, what that joke was, because, as legend has it, if one actually told it, the teller and all who heard it would die. But all was not lost, because before they expired, the Hysterium developed every form of comedy that we know today. From slapstick to stand-up, the tribe members did it all in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Joke. They felt that this is what their master of ceremonies in the sky wanted from them. Humor was their form of worship, and laughter was the way in which they prayed. So, besides the cave drawings, which featured many of their elaborate jokes, including that old chestnut of slipping on the batshit into the tar pit, a true tribe favorite as it was the subject of nearly 24 drawings, there is only one other reason we know of that the tribe existed. It was the sacred icon they left behind, the funny bone. Yes, the small bone that, when tapped on the ground, creates a vibration that causes involuntary laughter in anyone within earshot. So that's it. An entirely new faith of my own design. I could have done it. Hell, I just did. And imagine a religion where all God asks of you is to have a good laugh, and then get back to trying to be a nice person. Let's face it, we could use something like this, since we're living in a world that makes most of us so uptight that being nice is an exhausting proposition. Which is why my God would want each and every one of us to laugh, as it simply and miraculously alleviates stress. What could offer more hope to the world than a religion based on laughter? And what sells better than false hope? Not a goddamn thing. I know. I've done extensive market research. It's why, when watching late-night television and the infomercials start telling you about a pill that promises to help you lose weight or make your penis larger or keep you young, your finger immediately itches to punch those digits that appear at the bottom of the screen. Even worse, there's the spectacularly well-advertised book, The Secret, which is an incredible piece of bullshit, if you ask me. For those of you who missed it, the book actually tells you that you can have anything, and I mean fucking anything, you want, merely if you allow yourself to think about it. And of course, not to be outdone by either of these examples, there is every organized religion known to man. So, I ask again, why not a religion based solely on the laugh? It would be a stroke of genius. I figure, if God created us, how could he not have a really finely honed sense of humor? I think he definitely does. After all, he gave us a mind, which allows us to see life's incongruities and therefore enables us to laugh. As a matter of fact, I hold that laughter is one of the best arguments you can make to prove the existence of God, mine or anyone else's. And just what is a laugh? While it is as mysterious as music, I see laughter as a cosmic hiccup that allows us to stare into the abyss while we straddle the grave. It makes a bad day bearable. It gives us the breathing room to deal with life's bullshit. It is the mechanism that enables us to cope with the deepest emotional pains and scars. And while sometimes it can be coaxed, laughter, by and large, is a completely uncontrollable physical reaction that seems to come out of nowhere. If God truly did create Adam and Eve, imagine the moment after he finished his work, when he realized what he had done, and the howling that would have followed as the tears rolled down his cheeks. Laughter truly is a gift from above, and without it, we'd all be fucked. But like every other gift we receive in this life, it's not the thing that's so important. It's how we use the thing. In other words, what is it that inspires you to laugh? It varies from person to person, but luckily God, in his infinite wisdom, gave us a great starter kit. To put it quite simply, the penis is funny on its own. The thing looks like a long-lost Marx brother, and yet it is the instrument of reproduction. And let's fess up to the truth here. When it takes control of the brain, which is most of the time, it actually acts like a Marx brother. And that's when the fun explodes, so to speak. Then there is the fart. You have to be brain dead not to think a fart is funny. Sure, laughing at a run-of-the-mill bodily function is juvenile, but a brilliantly lit one, one that sparkles and flashes like a 4th of July fireworks display, is a joy to behold and puts a smile on any young man's face. And it's amazing how any major catastrophe fills email boxes within hours with a cascade of jokes. We may want to, and indeed need to, weep, but the survival instinct also tells us to laugh. So what it comes down to is this. I think that comedy and religion share a lot of similarities. They both help people gather in a space to share a common vision. They both give people a sense of transcendence. They both offer hope. They both offer comfort. They both are mysteries. And they both gather their biggest crowds on the weekends. So in conclusion, what can I tell you? You've heard it all before. Life's a bitch, and then you die. Hey, you know the rules. So you might as well enjoy it. Or bitch about it as I do. It really doesn't matter one way or the other. Just do whatever helps get you through the day. And worship anyone you want. Be it Yahweh, Buddha, Jesus, a side order of fries, or a Weight Watchers meal. The list is endless, truly endless. But this audiobook isn't. So goodbye, and go with God, my children. Or go walk the dog. This is Lewis Black. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Me of Little Faith. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced, directed, and adapted for audio by John McElroy. Me of Little Faith is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA Incorporated. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.